But I know. I know. It's easy to go to green.
It will go to green.
See? Did nothing.
Jeez.
Final Cut's going to have fun trying to match this up with the video.
Wait, it matches the video?
Yeah. It synchronizes it for me.
You don't... What?
I just hit a couple buttons and it does it all for me. I still have to go through and edit it and put everything together. But yeah, the synchronization part, it does it for me.
I didn't know it did that. Did you know it did that?
I didn't know it would do that for me either.
Will Apple Music do that? I'm not...
No.
Will Apple Movie do that?
iMovie? No.
iMovie?
No. iMovie's nowhere near that.
How does it know? How does it know?
It uses... Because the cameras are recording audio as well. It's crap audio.
Oh.
So it takes that audio from this audio. And
so it's not like lip reading.
No.
Okay. That'd be pretty cool if it was, though, right?
That would be pretty cool, yeah. Especially our lips behind the mic.
It's going to be a long recording, you people.
Yes, it is.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Out About Podcast. I am Patrick, and you all know much.
That's me, Chili.
And, of course, you all know our producer, Al Borland. I'm sorry. Jerome Burrow.
Jerry will do just fine. Thank you.
We prefer to call him Jerry Bear. Oh, man. How's it going? Because that interruption...
interruption was a... That introduction was an interruption. Let me tell you what.
The introduction of interruption was about how my day's been.
Yeah, it's been that kind of day.
I just... you know, you ever had those days where you're like, I am on fire?
Fireball.
And then you realize later on it's because you're literally on fire.
Yes, exactly.
And you're like, yeah. I need someone to come over here with a water cannon and put me out. Or a fire extinguisher.
Soak me down.
I wasn't going to go that far, but all right.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, well, as you can tell, it's been quite the adventure, quite a bit of fun. So we just got back from the Caribbean.
Yes.
And on a cruise, and it was a great trip, and we just came back to just working wide open, you know, just insanity.
Yeah.
And it's been, insanity.
Insanity.
Love it, though-ish.
Well, we knew when we left we were coming back to insanity.
We did.
We didn't know it was going to be this level of insanity.
I thought insanity was a workout program.
Right.
Where, like, you went to a gym at, like, 5 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. and they have you do, like, 10 seconds of crazy weightlifting, right. then 10 seconds of planking, and then 10 seconds of, like, running in place or something. Exactly. I didn't realize insanity was the world's on fire.
The world is on fire, literally.
Literally on fire.
Yeah.
So it's just been fun, but I'm happy to be in the studio. I'm happy to be here with you people and Jerry.
And by you people.
I can't say that, can I?
You just did.
I can't.
And we're going to roll with it. We're just going to roll with it.
We're not rolling with anything.
We're going to roll with it. They know what you mean out there.
No, they don't. They don't.
No matter how you try and fix it, they all know what you mean by you people.
I'm just so happy to be in the studio with all of you. And having a little group therapy real quick and just chatting about how things are going. Talk about a little news. Yeah. Got a little excitement going on.
Yes, we do.
We're kind of playing around just now. We are actually not yet on the cruise. So as of the recording of this, we are actually about to leave. Our information's a little outdated. Our conversation is a little interesting. So keep that in mind. We're a couple weeks behind. Ahead. A couple of weeks ahead.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, it's great to have the opportunity to go and hang out and take a little break and take a little breather. But leading up to it has been a lot of fun.
Lots of fun.
We got some teams coming to move into trucks this mm-hmm. week. We got, mm-hmm. what else? Brand new truck that's got issues-ish.
Yeah, we've had a couple of those that have had issues-ish. A couple of that we've caught ourselves.
Yes.
There was a couple that Fida caught before they delivered them to us.
Yes, that's what I mean. So we had a truck, brand new truck, leaky windshield, mm-hmm. and a head visor thing that needed to be worked on and stuff. So we just finally got that truck out of the shop. Brand new, day one. Hadn't even gotten it. Hadn't mm-hmm. even taken delivery.
New truck, new problems.
Paid for it.
Yeah, paid for it.
Paid for it, but hadn't actually received it yet. So we finally got that taken care of. Looking forward to getting that team That's actually one of our cool trucks. You know what it was? It was a truck that was at the expo.
It was.
So if y'all were at the expo, you would have seen it. And maybe even climbed in there and got a chance to just get around in it. So that truck is finally in our possession. They got everything taken care of, and we're about to schedule the branding appointment and everything with Panther. And it's an existing team that's going to come move into that particular truck, which has a shower, and it's super nice. So I'm very excited for them, and I'm glad to finally, you know, when you buy something, a truck, and you get it 3 weeks later, it's exciting.
It is.
But
when you buy it and get it 2 years later, even more exciting.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's a process. It takes time.
It's a process.
It doesn't happen overnight.
It does. It does not. It does not. In like one big order, I think you're alluding to, you know, we bought the trucks a year and a half ago, something like that. Or not bought, ordered them.
Ordered.
Supply chain issues, supply chain issues. Yep. Dealer I bought them from quits. And then the dealership that I bought them from gets bought by another dealership.
Right.
And then that, through all that, they didn't order little things like truck bodies. And so when they finally got the truck bodies ordered, they went to go put the generators on them, only to find out, guess what else they didn't order?
They didn't order generators.
They did order the reefer units. That's what's crazy through the whole process.
Yeah, that was crazy to me. I mean, I remember a year ago at the open house they had where the reefer dealer said, I've got your reefer.
I've got your
there.
Five
they,
units.
They came in two weeks ago, and we had them sitting there, and we're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was bananas. And so we finally got those things up and on the road, and I still got one more of those to take, but I think we'll be getting that probably in real time as you're listening to this. It'll be in a couple days, but for us right now, it'll still be a week.
Weeks.
But yeah, it's then that will be finally wrapped. I think we don't have a whole lot more going on. We're actually, it's fall time. We're about to settle into a little bit of a calm time, less trucks being taken on, yada, yada. So it'll be a nice little break from craziness.
I hope that you don't see the look on my face and think he doesn't believe me, because that's not what the look on my face is saying.
No, you know. I mean, you know the truck schedule. You know that I don't have anything coming
right
now.
I do know the truck schedule. We got a couple. Just because we don't have trucks coming in doesn't mean we don't have other things going on.
Oh, no, that's true. But I do mean from a operational getting brand new trucks ready for teams perspective.
Okay.
Yes. That's what's kind of screeching the brakes.
You know he's going to find like five used trucks to buy in this period.
I am not doing it. I'm not looking online.
Don't we have him on tape though saying that he wasn't going to do that again?
We do have him on tape saying that, yep.
And I'm not saying I'll never do it again because I've already said that.
I know.
But I'm not looking online. I'm not interested. I've had actually multiple people reach out and offer to sell some of their used inventory or used trucks, and I've turned them all down. Yes, sir.
Yeah, but those deals weren't right.
A couple of them were not bad.
But
a couple
they weren't
of them
right.
weren't bad. I mean, like, if you had a lot of money sitting around or had access to some capital,
right?
I think there were some decent deals out there.
Okay.
There was a couple deals that were like bananas insane.
Right.
It's one of those things where people get in this market and they don't realize what a depreciating asset is, or they don't realize it's not like buying a Chevrolet, running it for 5 years, and you're going to sell it for half the value. You're going to sell it for a quarter of the value.
And I think some people are still looking at the prices of trucks a year, 2 years ago, and thinking they still get that money out of them.
Correct. Yeah, that time's come and gone, sadly.
Yeah.
But and you got to look at what's in the market. There's not a lot in the market, so that does raise your value.
Sure.
There's not a whole lot of people buying trucks. So when you have to weigh those two things out, there's a couple of things I saw that were just greedy. It just is what it is. That's always going to exist. People are always going to be greedy. People are always going to not know what they have. I do find a lot of times your smaller owner operators have a hard time detaching this is my truck from this is what an asset is in the real world. You know, for example, unrelated to this, I'm a part of an ARI group since we're getting those ARI tractors.
Right.
Are buying those ARI tractors. There's a guy on there selling his ARI. It's a Kenworth. It's a good-looking truck. It's a sharp-looking truck. Was it a T660 or W9? I don't remember. One of those two. So it has a real narrow cab, but it looks sharp. Big, huge sleeper, 140, 160-inch, something like that, massive. 1.3 million miles. And he wanted like $140,000.
Wow.
And I'm like, who's spending $140,000 on anything with 1.3 million miles on it?
Yeah.
I'm not saying your truck's worn out.
No.
But it's not worth that.
In the real market, it's not worth that money.
No.
To you, yeah, the sentimental value, sure.
100%.
The money you put into that truck, yeah, you think it's worth that money, but in the real world, I'm sorry, it's just not.
Well, it's looking at an asset, again, as like, this is my truck. This is, I have all this pride. I've taken all this work. Don't you understand how much better it is? And it's like, I get that. We always want, if I do buy used, I want a well-taken care of piece of equipment.
Right, of course.
But you can't predict, even with an extremely well piece of maintained equipment, you can't predict crazy things that's going to happen. We had a team just recently had both their dash air and their rooftop go out at the same time. Like, how on earth is that possible?
I don't know.
The dash air ended up being a computer system. They had to go to Freightliner and have Freightliner reflash the AC control, because it's all digital now, so that it would work. And then on the rooftop, the fan disintegrated itself. It just broke up into 1,000 little tiny pieces, and they had to replace the whole rooftop. Like, how do you prepare for that? How do you plan for that? How do you tell someone, hey, this is an option? It is. But again, even if it was the most pristinely taken care of equipment, that can happen tomorrow. I don't know. Sometimes I see some of these deals and people have a hard time detaching themselves. But regardless, even if I see a steal of a deal, I'm not going to. What were we talking about again?
Yes, he's backing out. Oh my goodness.
I'm not.
He's over there doing the moonwalk. He's backpedaling so fast.
I'm just saying. I mean, it had to be a pretty impressive deal.
I get it.
It'd be an impressive deal. But there's a lot of people.
And if it came up and if things changed from being kind of settled in, like you said, it is what it is. We jump to it and take care of business.
Yeah. No, but I think I'm looking forward to a little bit of a slower pace for just a little bit. And then, you know, right dead in the middle of heart of winter,
right,
we'll speed things back up.
Yeah. When we can go from being outside in the heat to being outside in the freezing cold.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. When it's pretty outside, you don't want to spend time outside.
No, you don't.
But when it's extremely hot or extremely cold, that's the two ideal times to be working outside.
Yes, yeah. It is. Yeah. Get sunburned either way.
You do. Well, the difference is in winter, it comes from the ground up.
Right.
From the reflection off the snow. It's hysterical. So we had a lovely weekend. I want to thank you and your wife for hanging out with us. I'm sorry. Does it work? Yeah. Okay. We had a great time. We started off going out to a little festival in Columbus, a little small little street fair festival thing. They had, you know, the little 10-foot by 20-foot tents on either side of the street. They shut the street down. The cool thing about it was they had a funk pop band.
I don't know how you give them a genre, because they played some country.
He played country, Brown Eyed Girl,
Lizzo, Prince.
A lot of stuff. You definitely tell Prince was his favorite.
A Prince fan.
They
definitely
ended on Purple Rain. I mean,
he.
But great. I mean,
but
like,
he ran the gamut.
Yes, it was all over the place.
All over the place. And they were good at it too.
They were really good at it, and it made me. You know, honestly, it made me miss being out on the road. So in the Ohio area, I don't find a lot of these small festivals that have music going or bands playing. I'm sure they're out there, and I may get 20 comments saying, oh, check this out. And I just haven't seen them. But in Louisiana, we had them all the time. And when we were driving, that was something we would do, is find a small little festival, go to the festival, hang out, you know, buy something from the purveyors of whatever.
Find whatever, yeah.
Yeah. Great Polish hot dogs or whatever. And
fresh strawberry jam.
Or in this case, what I had the other day was the dark chocolate dipped strawberries. But here's the deal. You know when you get a chocolate strawberry and they have like the green leafy part on it, and you grab that and you dip it and then you take a bite and you've got all the leftover and you don't know, you throw it away. She took all that out.
Yeah.
It was just the fruit of the strawberry.
There was no stem.
Leaves, nothing.
Yeah, just
so everything. You could literally just take it, pop it in your mouth and go.
They were so good. They really were.
I remember we were out in, speaking of trucking, back when Eric and I were driving, we were out in Oregon.
Sure.
I'll go with that. So in Portland, I know you're from Oregon, but y'all aren't really Portland people. In Portland, if I'm not mistaken, half the city's like the main side of Portland's south of the river. Then when you go north of the river, you're in Washington. And there is a town, a city there.
Vancouver.
Yes. Thank you. So that was Buttermilk from offset.
Production assistant.
Yes. And we were in Portland and saw that Vancouver was having a little street festival. So we went. This little street festival was, you know, 500,000 people. little street festival. And that was the first place I ever had coffee.
First time you had coffee in your life, really?
Where they brought in the raw bean, okay, and they roasted it
fresh
wow, and then made a cup of coffee. And they talked about how you get all the oils and all the other stuff that gets zapped out of this freeze-dried stuff that we get in this. Let me tell you right now, those oils are no good. Buy your previously roasted 10-20-day-old coffee. That freshly roasted stuff was horrible.
So there are those that say you shouldn't drink fresh roasted coffee right then and there,
okay,
that you should allow it to rest for 7 to 21 days
really,
before grinding and consuming.
That was not the case. So they actually had their little baby rotisserie. No, that's
roaster.
Not the right word. Roaster.
Roaster, yeah.
They were putting the coffee on a spit, and they were spinning it slowly over a rotisserie.
Little bitty baby spit.
Each little bitty tiny ones, each individual bean.
Nice.
No, they had the little micro roaster, which, you know, they expect you to buy and have at your house, and then you buy the raw bean, and then you roast it yourself, and then they would make coffee right away with it, and it was terrible.
I bet.
It was just terrible. So letting it rest, so it's like a steak. Like, you don't eat a fresh cow.
No, you don't.
You let it age it. The law requires 10 days, right?
Yeah, you age it a little bit, and then some people will age it further,
yes,
to concentrate the flavors. But yeah, you age it first, and then you butcher it.
Yeah.
And then once you cook the steak, you still let it rest for 5 minutes or so,
afterwards.
10 minutes or so afterwards before you eat it.
Which you can't really do I don't know about coffee, but with espresso, because that's my jam is espresso.
Right.
You can't really do that because espresso actually dies.
Well, no, I get that. Once you brew it.
Yeah, 20 seconds.
Yeah. So just a quick snippet from espresso-works.com. Most baristas agree that consuming your coffee beans anywhere between 7 to 21 days after the stated roast date will give you the best tasting coffee. It's important to note that if you plan on buying coffee for immediate use, you shouldn't purchase beans that have been roasted less than a week prior.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Melissa and I have a brand of coffee that she likes it, so I like it.
Yeah.
And on the bag itself, it actually tells you when the coffee was roasted.
Okay.
Now, we're buying mass-produced coffee, so we got two bags in our Amazon automatic order thing the other day, and it had a roast date of July 23rd.
So you're plenty good.
So I went in the closet and grabbed the last bag of the previous batch. It had a roast date of June something.
Yeah.
So I put the two Julys in the back and put the June up front. So, but it has been a couple of months.
Yeah.
Well, a month at least for one section. But yeah, we're not coffee snobs like Jerry and Don. So, you know, that June coffee will be just fine for us.
See, I never really thought about the coffee and when it was roasted until I had this experience. But I always assume if I go to Walmart and buy my community coffee or something like that, it was roasted a long time ago. I never thought about the fact that it could have actually just been roasted a week or two ago,
yeah,
especially in Louisiana where they brew community coffee locally. So,
yeah,
roast.
Roast.
They do brew it as well, but it's mostly it is funny when you go to Walmart in South Louisiana. Do you remember? I don't know if they do it here, but down south they do, where they have the little coffee station at Walmart. And you can go, you get a little tiny cup. And it's community coffee. You just go and you do it and get a little coffee.
Never experienced that.
Okay. It's nowhere up here. I've only ever seen it in the South. So super common stuff down there to have.
Maybe it was
coffee.
A community coffee thing. I used to have a Costco down in Southern California where I used to live. They actually had an in-store roaster.
Hmm.
And they would sample their coffee, their Costco Kirkland brand coffee, right there for you. But
yep,
it wasn't the fresh roasted. It was, you know, from a bag of some sort.
Yeah, coffee from Costco a couple of years ago. We were there getting a bunch of stuff for like a mentor retreat or something. And they had coffee. And, you know, you walk around Costco for a little bit and a cup of coffee sounds kind of nice, doesn't
it? Oh, yeah, it does.
So I got a cup of coffee and it's 4 or 5 ounces. And it was like, holy cow, it's really good. And it was their Kirkland brand something, something. Now I can't recall what it was, but it was really tasty. I was very impressed.
You know, store brands have come a long way from what they used to be.
Back when it used to be just like beans.
Yes.
On a black and white label.
Exactly. But store brands have come a long way because stores are trying to push their brands. They're co-branding. Someone's making it for them.
Yes.
That makes that product all the time for their own brand or for others. So, and Costco is one of those that goes out and they don't put, generally speaking, they don't put their name on garbage.
Correct.
I've had some things there I didn't like that were Costco or Kirkland brand, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they're doing quality stuff. And I think all the big grocery chains are doing that kind of thing.
Little fun fact, Costco, their store brand is the same beans that Starbucks uses.
Really?
Interesting.
They just roast it themselves?
If you look on the back of the bag, it'll actually say, I think it says product of Starbucks or something like that.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So it's probably Starbucks roasting it and just packaging it in Kirkland bags.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And to their own spec of
How much roast. Exactly.
I know on the liquor side of things with Costco, a lot of people speculate that their vodka is made from Grey Goose.
Yes.
Now, Grey Goose has come out and said, we do not make their vodka. But it is a French distillery, and if you do a side-by-side comparison, you cannot tell the difference.
I'm going to adjust something you just said there.
Okay.
Costco has a couple different vodkas.
Okay.
They've got a French vodka.
Yes.
And I want to say it's an American vodka.
Yeah.
The American vodka, like the 57 times distilled,
mm-hmm.
the bottle looks just like a Grey Goose bottle.
Yeah.
I had a friend, an old roommate, who used to work for a packaging company where they sold packaging, and they sold the labeling for Grey Goose and Kirkland. Looked exactly the same.
Yeah.
Exactly the same. So.
Well, I mean,
fun fact.
It makes sense. If you have the resources someone like Costco has, then you could. And I get it too. Brands like Grey Goose can say, yeah, we don't make that vodka. The parent company of Grey Goose may make it all day long.
Oh, yeah.
They could make.
Oh, yeah.
They could, you know, because you think about a distillery like that. They can make Grey Goose vodka.
Mm-hmm.
They can make Kirkland vodka.
Right.
They can make Equate alcohol solution at 70,
exactly.
90, and 60 or whatever the percentages are. It's the same equipment. It's just, and actually a lot of the rubbing alcohols and stuff, people don't even realize a lot of that is coming actually from your vodka producers.
Right.
Because they're taking a portion of the vodka they can't sell, and they are, because it's just foul. It's with heads and bottoms,
heads,
right?
Heads and tails.
Heads and tails.
Yep.
They're taking that and sending it to the rubbing alcohol people,
right.
Who will then
distill it again to
get it to the proof that they need, because they need higher proof than what you'd have with vodka, and that's where they go. Yeah. So those your rubbing alcohol people, they're not starting with a base of water and corn or water and sugar,
exactly.
Wheat, whatever.
Yeah.
They're actually starting with a base of vodka.
Yeah.
It's kind of a crazy thing
and
they
do. A lot of folks don't know it. We're sitting here having a bourbon, and you have bourbons that are sourced from distilleries. If the bottle says bottled in a certain place, but doesn't say made or distilled in a certain place, well, it wasn't distilled by the company that says bottled, right? And there are some people, they're called non-producing distillers.
Yes. No.
Non-distilling producers.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So if I were to go to Patrick's Distillery and buy a bottle from you and a barrel from you to sell, I'm a non-distilling producer, NDP, right, where you're the distiller.
Yes.
Well, I could choose to not say on my bottle label who distilled this for me.
Yes. It didn't have to come from Patrick's Whiskey Trail.
Right. On the other side, it might be the distiller who says, no, you don't put my name on your bottle.
Yeah.
You don't tell the world where you got this from, but you're producing for 15 different NDPs.
Yep.
And no one knows that because you've got time on your still.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Because if you're not making something, you might as well make something.
Oh, sure.
And get paid
exactly.
for it. What is it? That Kirkland brand bourbon is made by Barton. They are from...
I just had this article pop up. There it is. It's right there. I just found it.
1792 people. News. Who is 1792? Is Bartstown Bourbon?
I think it is Barton.
Is Barton?
Barton 1792.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's made by Barton. And Barton makes bourbon that you can buy, their brand.
Right.
And actually, they are one that they proudly put their logo on the Kirkland brand. They do want people to know, hey, you're not buying... junk, you're actually buying a really good brand that's making it for them. So it is interesting what they choose to label and what they don't label.
Sure.
You know, they're going to label their coffee Starbucks, right. They're going to label their bourbon, what distillery did it, and they're going to, you know, their ketchup, you'll never know who made it.
You'll never know. You'll never know.
So, I think a lot of that brand push is coming from your Trader Joe's and your Aldi's, and I think maybe the one that I think back to that really pushed the local or the brand that they made themselves was Target. That was the first one that came to Baton Rouge, and I actually had a lot of their own name brand stuff was Target because I'm old enough to remember when we didn't have a Target.
Right.
And when it finally came to town, it was like, what is all this? Is it Marketplace or what do they use? I can't remember their brand.
I don't recall.
Thrive Market or
something like that. Yeah. I'm like, what is all this? I've never seen this brand before. And we got some stuff and it was really good. Mom used to like those little cheese stick things they make. And very impressed by it. And then it's like a local thing. And then ever since then, I've seen Walmart's quality go through the roof. Now Walmart has 3 or 4 different brands.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can actually go get organic spices that take on, you know, McCormick and some of these other people head to head. Or you can still buy the $1 for garlic salt.
Right. So you've got a couple different options
there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of cool to see that like dichotomy, and you can kind of choose like when I'm buying spices for the house or for cooking or whatever, if it is something like garlic powder, I'm buying the dollar stuff.
Sure.
If it's something that is a little more like vanilla or cinnamon sticks or something, I typically will go with their nicer, either the bigger brand or even their local brand, but okay. The nicer
sure.
version of it. Because sure. those things, I mean, like, you ever had spices that aren't spicy? Like, they've lost their flavor?
Yeah.
It happens. I don't want that. I don't want that.
Those things expire.
They do.
And there's some things you just cannot do store brand on. You cannot. Toilet paper.
Pepto-Bismol. No.
Yeah.
Don't want to do it.
They make store brand Pepto?
Oh, yeah. The pink stuff. The pink stuff.
No. That I take a daily pill for my acid reflux. Yep. And it they just got a store brand version of it, and I tried it, and I don't think it's going to work. It says the same thing.
There are certain things that you just don't want to risk, right? Yep. I mean, I know that the brand name of X works perfectly for me.
Yes.
Do I want to take the chances that the generic brand is not going to work, and now I'm in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Well, I also find other things like Advil or ibuprofen. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Ibuprofen is regulated by the FDA.
Sure.
If you buy Advil, if you buy Target, if you buy Dollar General, if you buy whatever, and that's what it is, that's what it is.
Right.
There's no... Now, does it have the candy coating, or is it going to be the liquid gel that's going to work faster sure. and all that stuff? Stuff changes. Yeah. But if you're looking for basic Advil versus basic ibuprofen anywhere else, it doesn't make any sense not to. That's not what we're here to talk about.
We're not. We're here to talk about...
The music that we listened to, the guy, the funky guy that was playing the Prince stuff.
Yes. Yes.
So that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that a lot. And then we went the next day out to downtown, had a lovely steak dinner. We don't go to downtown very often.
No, we don't.
It is super rare. And it was a cool steakhouse. It was a was it a bank? It looked like a bank.
Like an old bank, yeah.
It was like a 2-story open hall. And the top had a bunch of like stucco, and then paintings. It was painted.
It had paintings.
It like the Sistine Chapel. It was painted.
It also had like the stucco or the plaster medallions.
Yes.
I don't know if they were medallions necessarily, but was this plaster?
Yeah, it was 3-dimensional. It was super nice. And they actually had one section they were working on. They were like part of our progress as we continue our restoration efforts or something like that. So they are trying to bring it back. It's obviously one of the older buildings, but it was pretty cool. It was a Mitchell's Steakhouse. Mitchell's is a Landry Brands.
Nicole took care of us. Took great care of us.
Yeah. Yep. It was really nice. I certainly appreciated it. And then it was back to work on Monday. Yeah. How was your Sunday?
It was good.
Anything exciting happen?
Nothing I can talk about.
Anyway, so we are going to play a game. And the game is... Predictions for Yellow's assets. So again, as we've already discussed, at the time of this recording, we're a couple weeks out. So as of today, the time of this recording, which is, I'm going to let you know a secret, it's the 21st of August. It's not when we're releasing it, but that's when we're recording it. So as of today, there's been 2 bids for Yellow Freight's terminals. Not all the property, not their headquarters, none of that stuff, just the terminals.
166 terminals.
169. Oh.
My information from FreightWave says 166.
My information says 169.
Could be incorrect.
Could be a typo.
Could be. It could be kind of like that video on how much property the government owns. They just don't know.
They just don't know. Yeah, they're just guessing. So they're just speculating.
Right. Somewhere between 165 and 170.
Yes, exactly. So Estes came in. Estes Corporation, their LTL carrier. They've been around for a long time, and they are quite a large LTL. I think they're number – I just looked this up. They're number –
somewhere between 1 and 20.
They are number 14. So they are –
yeah, I was right.
Yeah, you were right. So as far as for-hire truck lines go – for-hire carriers, rather. Estes is number 14, Yellow is number 13. So they are pretty fierce competitors, neck and neck. Old Dominion was number 10. But Estes came in and they said, we will give you $1.3 billion for all of the terminals. It's B with a, that's billions with a B. That's a lot of money. A
lot of money.
And Yellow Freight said, that's going to pay almost all of our debt.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea. We should do that. And as I picture it in a courtroom, as Yellow is in court, I'm making all this up, but as they're in court and they're saying, Your Honor, we've reached a deal. We're going to make this happen. In the background, Old Dominion bursts through the door and goes, Your Honor, wait. And he runs in and he says, I'll give you $1.5
billion. $200
million
more.
$200 million more. Yeah. So, as you can imagine, at this point, things have gotten weird. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know who's going to take that. Are there more offers coming?
Well, here's the thing.
I don't know who else there would be.
Here's the thing. The key word you said there, and I don't know that you realize the word you said, was Estes offered a $1.3 billion bid. They're not saying we're going to buy this for $1.3 billion. That's that basically the way this process works. That's the opening bid. Even though there's no auction, there's no liquidation going on just yet, that's the opening bid. They set the bottom for where the bids start.
That's actually called...
when it's called a stalking horse purchase agreement.
Stalking horse bid, yep.
Right. The Old Dominion came in with their 1.5. Well, now there's a new floor. So there's still going to be a auction going on here. Old Dominion had to put down a 3% deposit in order to basically a 5% deposit to basically say, you know, here's our good faith deposit that we'll spend $1.5 billion on your stuff if there's no higher bidder. But it still has to go through the liquidation process and an open auction. So I think there will be other bidders. I mean, you've got R&L. Here locally, you got Ward. I don't know if they're big enough to do something like this, but you got a lot of players that can still come into this and bid this up pretty high.
Well, the other thing, too, is I'd be interested to see where the properties are because we're talking about trucking companies.
Right.
If they have a good enough portfolio of properties in key areas, you could see real estate investment firms coming in.
Oh, sure.
You can see apartment complex. Mm-hmm. Providers, you know, developers come in and say, we'll take that land and we'll spend $2.5 billion. If they do a survey and go, you know, these 100 properties are worth $3 billion, a real estate development company come and go like, here's $3 billion, and all these trucking companies will go like, bye-bye.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised to see a combination, a partnership between a trucking company and a real estate developing firm.
Well, that might even be what we already have.
Well, it could be, yeah.
Yeah.
Because does Old Dominion need all of the terminals that they're bidding on? Yeah. They may have terminals in the same locality that their terminal is better suited for what they're doing than the terminal of Yellow. Well,
I think Columbus is a great example of that.
I think so too.
Columbus's Old Dominion terminal is really nice.
Yeah.
It is really nice. I mean, you walk in, they got marble walls.
Wow.
It looks like it was built maybe less than 20 years ago. Okay. I mean, it's fairly new. The dock's nice and clean. It's all pristine. It's a really nice terminal. Yellow's terminal?
It's a classic LTL terminal. It's nothing special.
Nothing special about it at all.
Gets the job done.
It was built in the 40s, 50s.
Yeah.
You know, it was a regional terminal that went national. It is a very different situation. The parking lot needs to be completely redone. I mean, it's just, I could see that being something where Old Dominion buys it and immediately sells it.
Yeah.
Sells it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's in a really great area of town.
Great area of town.
I could easily see that being completely torn down and apartment complexes or something like that going up.
And they're already upgrading the roads around it.
Yes.
Because it is congested right there.
A little bit.
But the on-ramps to on and off-ramps to 270, the major intersection there is being upgraded.
Yes.
I can certainly see it being able to handle additional housing units there.
100%. And we're not saying apartments for the sake of just like apartments. Columbus is a city that desperately needs more housing.
Oh, desperately.
It is extremely difficult to get housing here. As a lot of people it's all over the news. People from Intel building this new factory are coming to Columbus and they're going like, there's nowhere to live. I mean, can you imagine moving to a city and you're like, all right, let's start the apartment search. And you pull up Craigslist and there's like eight apartments available and they want $5,000 a month. It's New York City. It's insane. So Columbus desperately needs more housing. So that's why I could easily see it going that direction. So
when Buttermilk and I were looking a year ago now, right?
Yes.
It was difficult.
Pre-Intel.
It was challenging to find a place. You know, you find somewhere, you got to apply right now.
Yes.
Sight unseen just about, which honestly is what we did in the place we looked. We did. It came up as available. We applied. We had applications already ready to go on whatever site we were using and submitted them. And it's like a Tuesday night, and they weren't showing the place until Saturday. But we had our application submitted early enough. We were the first ones to see it on Saturday. They didn't make a decision right then. They followed through with their other appointments. But we were the first ones that were qualified, and we got the place. There are other places we applied for, and it was like, no, sorry, that place is gone. It went 3 days ago.
Yeah. Well, even your neighbor that moved in recently, and they're great. I've met them several times, and they've really seemed to be very cool people. They only got the place because they know the owner. You know what I mean? Like they had an internal connection.
Right.
But outside of that, it's just like, you know, a house is gone before it's listed.
Even
it's
rentals. Crazy. Not just sales, rentals. Yes. Crazy. Insane.
And like in my dad's case, when he bought his house in Columbus, the only reason he got it was he was able to close faster.
Wow.
It wasn't even like a bidding war. You don't have to wait 45 days for me to close. Right. I can close very fast. And it's the only way he got his property. It's nuts. It is the Wild West of property out here, which is crazy because the rest of the country is starting to dip into a property recession.
They are.
And it's like, really? How's this happening?
Yeah. Little old Columbus. Who would have thought?
Right? Well, you know who would have thought? who wrote that movie? It was a book first, Ready Player One.
Okay, yeah.
All that takes place in Columbus, Ohio. Yeah. And I'm like, someone had a clue. Yeah. I remember when I saw that in the theater, I was like, oh, I'll be darned. It's home. But it is a cool city. I like it a lot. If you haven't had a chance to come here and hang out and visit, you should. It's a lot of fun. It's a really neat city. It does not show off from the interstate.
No, not at all.
Columbus does not show off from the interstate. It's like driving through Nebraska. Nebraska on the interstate's horrible. Nebraska, once you get off the interstate's really cool state. Same here with Ohio or with Columbus. You drive around the loop and God forbid you have to drive through downtown.
Oh no,
on the interstate.
Yeah.
It's terrible. The bridges look like they're about to crumble. It looks really rough. As soon as you get off the interstate, you're like, why? I'm in a different world.
Yeah, different
world
just happened? Completely.
It's insane.
You really are.
I hate that about our city, but it doesn't show well from the interstate. It does once you get off the interstate. But
agreed.
So, anyways, Estes and Old Dominion and Yellow. So, what do you think is going to happen, Vince? I think there's a chance because they are going to go through the full bankruptcy proceedings. I think now the government sees or the judge sees, court system sees that there's interest in the assets. They're not going to allow someone to make a pre-bankruptcy deal. Is that your understanding as well?
That's my understanding. Is the way this is working out, this is all pre-liquidation.
Yes.
So there have been they have come to an agreement with a fund that is an actual creditor currently that is paying for the liquidation.
Yes.
So they bought another loan to pay off some of the debt, and they're paying for liquidation to allow for that to happen. So I think that what we're going to see is what we just talked about. We may not know it's a partnership between a real estate investment company and a trucking company, but I think that's what we're going to see is a combination of those two buying at least the terminals.
Yeah.
Now, there are other real estate holdings, who knows, right? Their equipment, That's a whole another.
We haven't thought about that yet. That's not even on the.
Not even on the. On the but is yeah. someone like Ritchie Brothers sell their equipment? You know.
You know, I think
that's going to be just it's a logistical nightmare.
Yes.
When you drive by the yard here in Columbus and see all the trailers they have out there,
tons.
You can't even see the tractors from because they have the trailers blocking everything. Oh my goodness.
Well, and I think a lot of their tractors, again, we talked about this a few weeks ago, the older tractors are going to go south of the border. And sure. I think a lot of the newer tractors, I mean, maybe some really small trucking companies will take them, like your if you have a small trucking company, maybe you do a dedicated route. I think you might try to grab some of those because they have at least been maintained fleet wise. But the newer stuff, like I'm saying, within the last like 3 years or newer, I bet almost all of it goes to California. That's my gut feeling.
Okay.
Because California has such strict emissions systems going on right now.
Sure.
I think people in California would love to get their hands on California compliant, gently used, pennies on the dollar equipment. So I would bet to see a lot of the newer trucks head out west. And the rest of them will probably get dispersed through other LTLs. Like, I think of Ward. I think of not really Old Dominion or Arnell or something like that, but I think of like your smaller regionals.
Oh, Pitt, Ohio.
Yeah, Pitt, Ohio. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly those kind of companies. Say they are running older equipment.
They are.
And I think this would be a good opportunity for them to buy some newer stuff because a lot of their trucks are single axle tractors. It's not a really can't do a whole lot with it. It's really built for LTL, so I could see some of them, you know, buying some of their decent stuff less than 10 years old.
Right.
And then anything that's over 10 years old, I think it's going south of the border.
I think you're right. I mean, we're not looking at sleepers.
Correct.
Trucks here. We're looking at day cabs. That's all they're going to use.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. You're going to find smaller carriers that are going to upgrade their equipment because they have older stuff. I agree with you 100%.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, these...
Could you imagine these trucks going to Mexico and bringing freight across the border? Just all you need is a day cab.
Yeah.
But they don't have to worry about emission standards coming across the border. No. They have a decent quality truck.
Yeah.
That are a emissions-friendly truck. I can't speak for the decent quality, but an emissions-friendly truck they don't have to worry about. They can get across the border in Laredo.
Well, you know...
Go back and forth, no problem.
Well, you know, Yellow ran a lot of Volvos. That was one of their big Yellow Roadway. I mean, they ran a lot of everything. So they have a lot of Volvo tractors. And I could see a lot of those going down south to south of the border as well. And when I say south of the border, I don't mean like Texas or what is South Carolina. Is that what it is? South of the border is on I-95?
It is in South Carolina, isn't it?
It is I-95 south of the border. Yeah.
I've never
seriously
heard that.
The truck stop.
The truck stop.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With
okay,
the giant sombrero.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Took me a second. I'm there. I called up.
Welcome back, Jerry.
Yeah.
So we're talking about Mexico. Or further south, because it's not just Mexico. There's a lot of Latin American countries that would love to get their hands on
these
equipment.
They would.
But the Volvo pulled out of Mexico a couple years ago.
They
quit selling trucks there. So I could see a lot of people, Volvo operators, taking the chance to get their hand on more Volvo equipment. Especially if you've got Volvo techs, you've got Volvo spare engines, you've got Volvo... All that stuff, they're deleting any emission systems on it. It's gone, yeah. So if you've got all this Volvo knowledge, why not go ahead and take a Volvo truck? Volvo trucks are great trucks. Well, why not take them?
You mentioned they're deleting the emissions on them. I think if you get a truck like this from the United States, a newer truck, you don't delete the emissions on them. You keep those that are deleted already in Mexico, and you use these for cross-border traffic because they have the emissions,
right? Because they're legal.
Yeah. So I think that, but that just...
I can see that as well.
Instead of buying new tractors,
they're
now buying these used tractors for, like you say, pennies on the dollar that they can put in place and not have to go out and spend $250,000 on a new tractor.
And you do see just outside of Monterey, there's that whole giant city being built by the... it's a lot of Chinese investment.
Uh-huh.
And they're a lot of the plants they have in China, they're actually moving to Mexico. It's a little more expensive because of labor and property, but it's it makes sense because they can get stuff to America a lot faster.
A lot faster.
In Canada, as far as that goes, and in other parts of the country, or parts of the world. But they also don't have to worry about the ocean shipping thing.
Right.
Isn't it crazy that we finally gotten to a point where, as great as containerization has been and getting things across the Pacific Ocean, we kind of mastered that pretty good. and it just took one giant pandemic to show, hey, this isn't working.
There's a huge bottleneck here, potentially.
There's a huge bottleneck and a huge economic issue.
Sure.
Where if we can't get enough product, it doesn't make sense to ship one of those massive ships to America. Right. So a lot of the Chinese tech companies, well, just to everything. It's furniture, techs, all that everything. Stuff. They've realized that, so they're building this huge. Look it up online. I can't remember what it's called. It is a massive, I say village. It's a city. It's probably the size of Monterey. It's huge. You have Hofasan Industrial Park, and it is 850 hectoacres. They've already put it opened in 2016, so it's new. I mean, I realize 2016 is not that new, but when you can put it in reference to trade with China or trade with Mexico or whatever, it's new. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it ain't that old. So it opened. There was 10 manufacturers there. They put over $1 billion into it.
Wow.
What makes that so interesting is that a battery plant just moved in, and the battery plant spending $1.4 billion on just itself by itself.
Wow. Just to build their own factory.
Just to build their own factory. So what started out as a $1 billion investment is going to have multiple billions of dollars.
Right.
They said right now 1,500 people have moved from China to this Mexico. Area to manage it, and they're hiring Mexican workforce to run it. And it's 2.5 hours from Laredo border.
That's
nothing.
That's an easy day trip.
Easy day trip. There and back twice.
Yeah, twice.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. It's 10 hours. I don't know what the hours service are.
Right.
In Mexico, it may actually be fine.
Yeah.
But well, even in America, 2.5 hours, it's 10 hours. You can drive for 11.
You can do that.
Yeah, yeah. You could do it.
But you're doing that trip twice, and you're not sitting in line crossing the border.
Correct.
You're dropping it at a cross dock on the Mexico side of Laredo.
Yes.
Nuevo Laredo.
Yep.
And someone else is bringing it across. That's easy.
Easy. And you know what you don't need for that? A sleeper.
You don't.
Which is what makes it so great of these trucks. I mean, I could easily see some companies down there buying a gross of these trucks to be able to do that. Because as this is growing. Like right now, they have 10 companies that are in this area, and they are going to 35. So they say in the next 2 years, there'll be 35 companies in this area. From 10 to 35, they're over tripling it, almost quadrupling their amount of companies in investment. And this is from the end of 2022. So we're already halfway there.
Wow.
It's amazing what they're doing. And there was a tariff that they're getting around.
Okay.
So that's another thing that's beneficial. Sure. Importing goods from Mexico doesn't encounter a 25% tariff that you do get when you go to China. The thing about that is the manufacturing costs are less than 25%. So it's not like they're making 25% more. They're making the difference in what the manufacturing cost is and the tariff.
Right.
So it is advantageous financially. You know, Americans really like getting stuff now.
They do.
When they want it. And this is going to make it faster. So that's where I could see these trucks going and really making a big difference. It's also why I'm very optimistic and very excited about things Panther's doing. Panther has invested in a terminal down in Laredo. They are kind of doubling down on that presence. Our teams are sitting in Laredo for a couple hours.
Maybe.
If not picking up at the exact same time.
Right.
Which is a far cry from what it was back when Eric and I were driving. You would go to Laredo and it could be a day or two before you got out. And to go from a day or two to hours, that's massive in my opinion. That the quantity of freight is just bananas.
It's insane.
And a lot of those things, like we talk about the Intel plant that's coming here, those chips are probably going to go south the border to build, go into computers or televisions
or phones or whatever
and then come right back up.
Yeah.
So it's a two-way cycle. It's really interesting to see what's happening.
We're doing that with auto parts right now.
We are.
I don't know how many loads that Buttermilk and I carried from anywhere across the United States to Laredo that were going into Mexico that were coming back. I mean, we carried the wire. I don't know if it's wire, but it's the metal that goes in a headrest that puts the headrest on the seat.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We carried those just bare to Laredo. They were going to Mexico to get the foam padding and the upholstery put on them to come right back here, whether it was in a car already or just by itself. But, yeah, how many things did we carry that were going down there to go into cars and come back?
And again, it's like you say, stuff you wouldn't think about.
Yeah,
we carried We carried a bunch of, they were open containers. I remember because I thought it was so strange they were open containers. Mm-hmm. They had no lid. Typically, when you haul products, you don't see the products.
Right.
They're completely encased right. in some form of packaging. But this was just open containers. Yeah. So you could just reach in and grab stuff. Mm-hmm. And what it was wiring harnesses for, I think it was Freightliner trucks.
I believe it.
And so it was just a couple barrels or, yeah. or massive cases of random wiring harnesses. Yeah. And we drove them down there and they took them and whatever. And yep. I thought this is the most least secure thing you could ever have. We, just a weird
We carry thing, tons but. Of auto parts in big plastic crates. That was the standard.
Yes.
And the plastic crates would have on the side of them, the crate itself was property of
Nissan.
Thank you, Nissan or Toyota yep. or whoever. And you would go into these places, these factories, and they would have their staging area above the top would say Nissan, Toyota, Ford, whoever.
Yes.
And their crates would all be for that company. Yeah. You know, that's what we carried auto parts in was these big, open, huge plastic totes.
The people that put the brakes, the disc brakes. So we moved majority of our trucks now that everything we're buying new, but the majority of our trucks now have disc brakes, which are night and day better than yes. drums. We have three different brand trucks, Volvo, Kenworth, and Western Star, Freightliner. Every single one of them had Bendix brakes.
Yeah.
That's just what they had.
Yeah.
All of them had Davco fuel filters. All of them had, what was the air dryer company? I can't think of their name off the top of my head, but it's all the same brand air dryer.
Yeah.
Like, for some parts on vehicles, they're just one manufacturer. We don't really care if Toyota's using a Hitachi starter on their engine that
right.
GM's using, that Ford's using. No. None of us care about that. We care about how do the seats feel and what does the body molding look like and how's the infotainment center work.
That's it.
So it makes sense. They're not going to put money in it.
Nope.
They're going to let someone else do that.
Yeah. I'm going to go as a manufacturer. I go to the subcontractors and say, "Oh, I need a part that does X, Y, and Z." Oh, you have one already. Fabulous.
Yes.
Give me 1,000 of them. Give me 50,000 over the next 5 years.
Otherwise, you can spend $100 million designing R&D, your own.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff too has to be safety tested and all that stuff. You got to prove that it's not going to break. You got to prove that it's not going to catch on fire. Yada yada. Why go through all that when you can just grab one that's already being built and it maybe cost a penny more than you making it yourself?
Exactly.
It's exciting things that are happening in Mexico. There's politics behind it. If you want to dig more into it, go for it. We're not going to get into that on this show, but we are acknowledging there is a demand there, it's a rapidly growing demand. I think on our side, we're going to be able to haul in more freight in and out of Mexico.
Oh, sure.
We don't actually go into Mexico. We do stop at the border. We go to one of the cities and we cross dock in America. So you never actually cross into Mexico. There's a lot of opportunity for those companies in Mexico to purchase some of these assets and utilize them in those particular manners. And this is just one example. There's actually two or three of these towns popping up across Mexico.
I believe it.
For different ports.
I'd imagine they're popping up closer to different border crossings.
Absolutely.
You know, and not just Laredo, but McAllen further south.
El Paso.
Or El Paso or Del Rio, Eagle Pass.
Tijuana.
What's the one just south of Phoenix in Arizona?
Calexico?
Calexico is more in California. I was thinking though, there's another one I can't think of the name of right now.
I know you're talking about
Nogales. Nogales.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right there.
When you go south of Tucson, right?
South of Tucson, exactly.
Yeah.
I had a great idea just now though.
Go on.
What if we bought a bunch of these trucks from Yellow?
Okay.
Started a company in Mexico, called it Amarillo, which is yellow in Spanish. Don't change the name on the truck. You don't have to. It's yellow. Amarillo, yellow, whatever, right? And then we just run these trucks in Mexico.
We'd like you to send all your comments about that to chili@theoutofbeltpodcast.com. Yes, that's an idea.
It is an idea.
It's an idea.
That's what I said it was. Didn't say it was a good one. Just an idea.
It is an idea. There's a furniture store that's our furniture factory. It's opening over there. $200 million, 8,000 jobs. There's another one that's 15,000 people. So much stuff. It's just unbelievable how much is happening there. So, it's interesting. You can go over to, on YouTube, there's a guy named, Wendover Productions.
They do great videos.
They do some really good infotainment. If you just like some knowledge and just want to nerd out on a quick 20-30 minute video. Right. He's a great source. And he has a good article about what's happening in Mexico and China. And I encourage you to go check it out. It is really cool. You know, he doesn't always talk about transportation, but he does talk quite a bit about transportation. So there is some other stuff in there, trucking-wise, too, you can go check out. Yeah. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen. I am anxious to see on both sides the yellow thing. Are we wrong? Are we right? Do one of these two carriers end up with the property?
Right.
Does a humongous REIT or
real estate investment trust,
yes, come in and buy up the land and then lease it out? I mean, yeah. That's another thing is you got to be sitting there as a real estate investment trust going, ooh, if we bought that land that they mm-hmm. want, we could rent it out to them
yep.
and make money. So yep. there's just a lot going on with that, and I'd be interested to see what happens. I'm curious, hey, is FedEx Freight going to throw their name in?
Yeah.
Is FedEx Ground going to throw their name in? Like, it's not just LTLs that use that. Package delivery use that yep. too. So
yep.
it's very interesting. I can't wait to see. I hope this ages well, but there's a chance we're going to be listening to this podcast in a couple of weeks and going like, ooh,
we missed it.
Way wrong.
We missed the mark.
We missed the mark. We were way off.
That's why you don't use us for your investment advice.
No.
Don't do it.
I would not.
Investment, legal, taxes, not us.
None of that.
Entertainment purposes.
Exactly.
Only.
Exactly. Pure speculation.
If you're curious about trucking, we have a thing or two to say. Not many,
yeah,
but a thing or two.
A thing or two. Yeah.
But so I hate to do this. It seems like time is flying tonight.
Yeah.
But we have to talk about something. It's in our contract. You've heard us talk about it before.
I need to see this contract.
It's okay. We will work out a time
okay.
where you have a chance to meet with the lawyers.
Sounds good.
And you can look over the contract. We just, you know, the thing is, they're in Alaska, and they're so far behind our schedule.
Yeah.
And the only way you can get there is on a
sled dog
being pulled by a Cessna.
Oh.
It's kind of a Santa Claus thing. You got to fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No parachutes or safety nets. It's a weird situation.
I'm about 2 inches away and a little more gray from Santa.
You got a little more to go, but I can see where you're going with that.
Yeah. Working on it.
Yeah. But our contractual obligation is to talk about the play of the week, of which there's only 8 more left.
We need
so I don't know what we're going to do.
The play of the week.
And it's playing right now.
It is playing right now.
It's the airplane of the week.
Oh, that's pretty slick.
That's so
like
cool. I like it a lot.
That's cool.
So besides being murdered by Jerry, we should talk about this airplane.
We should.
Look at his face. He's just like.
Because now all I can think about is I got to find a little jingle to throw in there.
It's the airplane of the week. So it better not be it.
I was already thinking it was.
So you see, this is a very cool airplane, very interesting airplane. We used to fly them all the time. So Delta's constantly, not just Delta, every airline is constantly looking at their route network and seeing who's flying where so we can put what airplane where.
Okay.
Because unlike driving a 40-foot straight truck that gets the same fuel mileage fully loaded or completely empty,
right,
airplanes care. Every pound you put on an airplane is a pound of fuel you burn. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Interesting.
So that's why they have so many varieties of different shapes and sizes. Well, not really shapes, but sizes. Because they... if you have a route that only typically has 50 people, you only want to put a 50-person plane on it.
That makes sense.
Because you're burning so much more fuel to have even a 70-person plane. So this is a CRJ-700. It was built by Bombardier Aerospace.
Canadian company, right?
A Canadian company. But today, if you wanted to buy one, you would have to buy them from Mitsubishi Heavy Industries. Mitsubishi bought this program from Bombardier. They didn't buy Bombardier. They bought just the program, the CRJ program. Now, Jerry and I both know this particular series of airplanes from the CRJ 200, one of our favorites. Mm. It's tiny. It's like a Nissan Versa of airplanes.
Right, gotcha.
It's extremely small and cramped and very uncomfortable for people of any kind of size. You would not like it. I didn't like it. Jerry hated it. I actually hated it, too. I flew 2 hours from Atlanta on one time. Yeah. It was bad. It was really, really bad. Hated it. But this is the 700, so it's the bigger airplane. It's actually not the same size fuselage. It is a bigger fuselage. It's the CRJ-900, which you fly on frequently. The CRJ-900 is a longer stretch. This is just a shorter version of that. So it's wider, taller, longer than the 200, but it's only a little shorter than the 900. Cool little airplane. I like United. It's a weird size when it comes to aviation. There's not a lot of these that people use. United Airlines actually took theirs, and they pulled a bunch of seats out and called it the CRJ-550, but technically it's still 70. It's just got a different name. And it's kind of neat. They have like a first class up front, and they have like a bar area. Not drinks bar, but like a food snack bar.
Okay.
And you can just walk up and grab a soda out of the machine, out of the fridge or a snack. And it's only 50 people, whereas a CRJ-70 is 70 people. Get it?
Makes sense.
Yeah. Or 700, rather, is 70 people. 900 is
90 people.
90 people. And the 1,000?
100.
102. I don't get it either. So, but the, so this is a 70-person jet. It is, again, I actually kind of like them. They're pretty quiet. Not dead quiet like some of the new stuff, but like pretty quiet. I find them reasonably comfortable. The only thing I have an issue with this jet is I don't fit in the restroom.
Which I get that.
Kind of a strange situation.
I get that. Yeah.
So there's another one. This is CRJ. There's another one called an ERJ. It's a little bit, it's made by Embraer, a Brazilian company. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit wider of a fuselage, a little taller, and the bathroom is a little more spacious. I can actually fit in it.
Okay.
This one, I literally, like, if you can imagine the curvature of an airplane, I would have to curvature my body to fit in the bathroom, and it's just, I just don't.
Yes.
So, thankfully, they don't depart them on very long flights, but I used to fly the 700 all the time, and then I found myself where I'm flying 900s all the time.
Okay.
And I'm like, what happened to the 700s? Did Delta get rid of them? So I actually did a little investigation. So two things I found out. ExpressJet. So it's a Delta connection airplane, which means Delta flies it, but they don't own it.
Okay.
Kind of like our trucks where FedEx operates it,
but they don't
own it. Or Panther operates it, but they don't own it. Same concept. So Delta flies the airplane, but they don't own it.
Okay.
And so there's a bunch of different companies that own them. This one is ExpressJet. And I looked into it. In 2022, they went out of business.
Huh.
And I was like, well, that probably explains why I haven't flown one in a while. They tried to come back as a boutique airline flying a 777. It didn't work. But that's why I haven't flown these in a while. And I also looked it up. They still have a few companies that fly these CRJ-700s for Delta. But to put things in perspective, they have 168 CRJ-900s.
Okay.
They have 18 CRJ-700s.
Wow.
So not many.
No.
Very, very few. It's just an odd size. The fuel burn's not a whole lot different than the 900. And you can cram 20 more people in it.
So the 900 is more flexible as far as what routes
it
can put
is, on. Yeah. And part of that, too, is the U.S. government, TSA, requires there be one flight attendant to every 50 people.
Okay.
So when you have a 70-person,
you need two flight
attendants.
You have
to have two flight attendants.
When you have a 90-person,
you still need two
flight attendants.
Exactly.
Oh,
so
I'm picking up
and when you have 102, you have to have three.
Right.
Which is why that variant's not popular either.
No, thank you.
So it's... it's kind of a weird thing where the extra flight attendant offsets the additional fuel burn. So that's why they don't buy a lot of them.
Right.
Because it's all cost, right?
Sure.
And 900 is more flexible because you can do a little more with it.
90 with just two. Or
exactly.
If you had to fly in a 70-person route, you still have just the two.
Exactly. So it's a unique airplane. It's nice. It's another one where the two engines are on the very back of the plane, but they're a lot smaller than the 717s, the DC-9s, and this that we've talked about. They're actually comically small. They really don't look like they would be strong enough to power the airplane.
No, it doesn't.
They're very, very small. The wings are kind of neat. I like them because they come straight up at the ends, pretty high up, and it looks like goalpost. Like if you kick a football over the wing, you're going to get a touchdown or field goal.
3 points.
Exactly. So, cool little airplane. I dig it. I haven't flown one in a very long time, but at one point I was flying them fairly regularly. And if you get lucky, you'll actually fly one too because they are still out there. They are still being flown by a couple different companies with Delta. But not many.
So when I first saw this plane earlier today, I peeked at the name on the base plate, and I saw it was a CRJ, a Bombardier plane.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, that looks awfully big for a Bombardier plane, a CRJ. Then I realized it was just the size of the model. I looked at the number of windows on the plane and realized it was just the size of the model. It was a little deceptive. But Bombardier is known for building smaller aircraft, correct?
Correct. So Bombardier makes all kinds of stuff. They make Sea-Doos.
Right.
They make Ski-Doos.
Yeah.
They make trains. They're big and huge in train manufacturing still.
Well, yeah, and like light rail.
Light rail and subways.
Heavy rail and subway stuff, yeah.
Yes. So on heavy rail, they do not so much locomotive power, but they do a lot of the passenger cars
sure.
and such. Sure. And they were doing aerospace. They've pretty much sold it all off at this point. They are the original, or not the original, but they had the Dash 8 contract for a long time, which is a very common propeller plane. You would have flown it back in the 90s.
Okay.
Or 80s, 90s. They sold that off. And then the Bombardier, this series, they were doing very well with. And they sold that off to Mitsubishi because Mitsubishi desperately wanted to be in the game. They were actually building their own plane. They had two under development.
Really?
They had a couple $1 billion. It's very expensive to build an airplane. They had a couple $1 billion into it and decided it was cheaper to buy Bombardier's airplane business than it was to continue building their own. And they literally took a crane with a giant wedge on it.
And smashed
and tore their airplanes up into little pieces. It was very sad because they actually had some really great ideas. It was a really cool, the couple things they were doing was really cool. But again, economics.
I can see them taking the ideas they had and incorporating them into the Bombardier planes.
Yeah. Well, and you've got the CRJ-900 next gen.
Okay.
I really like those airplanes. I find them very comfortable. It's the same engine, but they've redone the interior.
Gotcha.
And they've really thought it through nicely. It's a very comfortable airplane to fly. I like that they have a first class cabin. You know, the 200s don't. I like that they are reasonably spacious. These smaller airplanes get a lot of flack. But in reality, because they cram so many seats on like 737s and A320s, you actually get a wider seat on these smaller airplanes. Even in economy, they still have typically like an 18.5-inch wide seat, whereas a 737, you're like 17 inches.
Right.
So, I mean, an inch and a half of width doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a lot.
It goes a long way.
And especially like this plane's 2 and 2. So, you know, if you're traveling with someone, it's just you two on a row together. Right. You don't have to worry. There's no middle seats at all in this plane. So in first class, it's 2 and 1. So if you're a solo traveler,
you have your own space.
Can actually be in your own seat on your own side.
You get a window and an aisle.
Exactly. So it is a neat airplane. I enjoy it. I've flown it, the 700 and the 900 quite a bit. The next gen really took it to a new level of comfort. Now this is one though that if you carry on your bags, they're like, we're going to gate check that for you.
Yeah. Smaller planes.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, but that's the CRJ-700. By ExpressJet, former company with the very rare airplane. And I give it 2 thumbs. Go for it.
Nice.
No seatback entertainment, though. Bring your own iPad or your phone.
Well, yeah, most of us do anyway, don't we?
I always have my phone on me.
Yeah.
So.
Always.
Yep.
Yeah.
That brings us to the end of the show.
Are we there already?
I believe we are.
These things go by so fast. They go by so much fun.
Jerry. I'm sorry. Jer Bear, what have we forgotten to say?
So if you would like to learn more about this expedited industry and what we do over here at Highfield Trucking, please visit us at our website at www.highfieldtrucking.com. You can chat live with any of our agents over there, get more information Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard. You can also check us out on social media, Facebook, Instagram, The Outer Belt Podcast on Facebook, the_OuterBeltPodcast over on Instagram. If you would like to give us a phone call, our recruiting agents would love to talk to you. Our number is 1-833-HIGHFIELD. We would love to talk to you and tell you all about what we do over here. If you have any comments, suggestions, chime in on anything we said on the podcast, send us an email. We do read those, theouterbeltpodcast@gmail.com. And we are also available on all of your favorite streaming apps. So if you can't watch us on YouTube, make sure you download us on your favorite streaming podcast so that way you can listen to us while you drive down the road.
And if you can, drop a comment in the comment section of this video podcast, whatever you're listening to us on. Even if it's just a heart or a thumbs down, either one, it's good.
Just something.
Just something. Let us know you're out there. We appreciate it. We do watch all those things. They do help the algorithm put us in front of more faces, more audience. We appreciate that. We think we have a great thing going on. Are we silly? Sure. Are we a little crazy?
Yes.
Yes. Do we share some news? Occasionally. Are we a good way to kill an hour driving down the road? I think so. I think so. And if you can, just press any button in front of you, thumbs up, thumbs down, I don't care. Ring the bell and or hit the bell, and we'll send you reminders letting you know that we're when our videos drop. They do drop every Saturday morning, except we do a live, which we haven't done in a couple months.
And we probably won't for another
We probably won't
few
either.
Weeks at least.
We're going to call this our end of season. And so come fall season, we should be able to come next year, we should be
back on it.
At some point, we will do a live.
We will.
We promise.
Promise.
It's just a little hectic with our schedules, but we appreciate everything you do. We thank you so much for sharing us with your family. Thank you for sharing an hour of driving down the road with us. Thank you for all you do. Please, 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 please be safe and make good decisions.
And please don't leave money on the table.
And keep those wheels a turning.
Good night.